Catch me there, verse 1. My son, attend to my wisdom. Bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her, come not nigh to the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others and thy years to the cruel. Chapter 6, verse 5. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. Drop down to verse 22. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. When thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is a light, and the reproofs of instruction are the way of life, to keep thee from the strange woman, from the flattery of the tongue of the strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in thy heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her shall not be innocent. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. For jealousy is the rage of a man, therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. Chapter 7, beginning in verse 4. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger that flattereth with her words. For at the window of my house I looked through my casement. So he's observing. And beheld among the simple ones, that's young fools, I discern among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner. And he went the way of her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot, and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she called him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry and carved works with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. For the goodman is not at home. He has gone a long journey. He had taken a bag of money with him, and he will come home at the day appointed. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. So talk. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goeth after her straightway, as an ox goeth to the slaughter, and as a fool to the correction of the stocks. Till a dart strike through his liver, his innards, and a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths. For she has cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. Well, last time in this short series, we got through about, I think, 7 points. I'd like to just give you just a quick summary of those, or just give you really the grocery list. We started this off, of course, talking about boats and learning how to trim your motor, tilt and trim of a motor. And a lot of boats now, if you have a little bit larger boat, they'll either have a mechanical trim that you have to set up before you go out, or they have electric trim. And it's really important that you have that, especially if you're going to navigate in rougher waters. So he pointed out the illustration of that and then used that as we went forward. But the first thing that I shared is we each and every one of us in the dangers of life and being keeping our marriages faithful, keeping our marriages tight as God would have them, is we've got to, number one, realize our own vulnerability. But by the grace of God, there go I. You can never think, I've got this. That's a bad sentiment. All right? Always know that I can and I could unless. Always know that. So realize your vulnerability. Number two, preset the trim on your boat. Know that there are rough waters out there and you can't control the weather. You can't control other people. You can't control other circumstances. So you need to think about these things ahead of time and be prepared. So preset the trim on your boat. It's imperative that you learn how to do that, and it's better that you learn how to do that while you're at home with your mom and dad so they can help you preset the trim on your young life and in your boat, because the waters are definitely going to get rough out there. Number three, we talked about stay away from turbulent waters and times when turbulence is found. Don't go fishing if you know a hurricane is hitting the coast. Don't go out. Matter of fact, they'll cancel it. You know, if you go try to go out on a commercial boat fishing trip, they will cancel for you. They know it's too dangerous to be out there. So stay away from turbulent waters in times when turbulence is found. Late at night, turbulence. Certain parts of town, turbulence. Certain people, turbulence. Stay away from turbulent waters in times when turbulence is found in your life. It's number three. Number four, guard yourself against physical beauty, provocative clothes, and provocative acts. You can't hardly get away. Every time I just get disgusted with our culture and the sensuality, it seems, of everything, then I think about the missionaries and those who have to serve in places like France. And it is so far beyond what we have to experience here. It's unbelievable thinking somebody could walk in purity before God in places like that when you have soft porn everywhere. Everywhere. And it's a lot worse than that in certain places, in the public. You don't have to go to certain places in town to see it in some of these nations. So guard yourself against physical beauty, provocative clothes, and that type of thing. Number five, do not believe everything that you hear. Don't believe it. Don't believe everything that you hear. Flattery is as dangerous as the tongue is dangerous. So be careful about what you hear. Number six, and this I think is where we would pick up. Watch out for emotional and so-called spiritual justification. Watch out for emotional and so-called spiritual justification. Now, look at chapter 7 again, verse 12. Now she is without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she called him and kissed him with an impudent face, said unto him, here's the manipulation. I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. I'm up to where I should be with the Lord. Therefore came I forth to meet thee. You're special to me. You're so special. I mean, you're the one that should have been a part of my life all along in my life. This day I paid my vow diligently to seek thy face. You and only you. It's a lie. But she's going to put it out there anyway. And I have found thee. I've been looking for you all of my life. All these kinds of things are emotional and spiritual justification. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry. My arm, the carved works and fine linen. I have perfumed my bed. Come, let us take our fill of love into the morning. Let us solace ourselves with love, for the goodman is not at home. Now, I know verse 19 talks about the goodman being away, but more often than not, what I hear down through the years is when someone is going off the reservation, they will try to start saying, well, I am not taken care of as I should be at home. And then you go to the office and say, well, you deserve better than that. Yes, I do. And boy, here it comes. And on it goes with emotional and so-called spiritual justification. And, well, I should feel sorry for you. No, you shouldn't feel sorry for them, all right? You should pray for them, but you shouldn't feel sorry for them. Now, people bent on improper relationships will not stop at anything They will go right on through all the barriers into the spiritual realm and pretend to be right with God in their improper acts. We'll just put it that way. All right? They will just stoop to just about anything. Number seven, I think we're on number seven. Regularly question your conscience. People say all the time, I know my heart. Well, the heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? Now, John MacArthur wrote an excellent book, and the book is called Vanishing Conscience. How is it, you know, in life? You're Christian people. I know you're here Sunday night, and you're in a conservative church. But how is it some people seem to be able to live, it seems, without a conscience? I mean, what you see and what you hear today is so far left. You think, how in the world can people think that that's okay to do something like that? But it's a vanishing conscience. Now, the conscience is not infallible. The book of God is infallible, but the conscience is not. It's not foolproof. It's not airproof or anything else proof. The conscience of man, by the way, the heart of the Old Testament is the conscience of man, is not really a light, but rather more like a skylight, which can become dirty and distort the truth of the light of the Word of God. The conscience is formed by various things. It's formed by tradition. It can be formed by truth, and it can also be formed by error, by lies, even self-imposed lies. And the conscience can be tricked into thinking error is truth and truth is error. And you be sincere about it, but be sincerely wrong. Titus 1:15 says, unto the pure all things are pure, and unto them that are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure, for but even their mind and conscience is defiled. So the standard our conscience holds may or may not be biblical guidepost. We can have it all wrong. All wrong. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that when there's everything wrong with that. And you say, how in the world can some people think there's nothing wrong with that? And we know that there is, according to God's Word. Now, according to 1 Timothy 3:9, the Apostle Paul tells us that we ought to strive to have a clear conscience before God. A clear conscience. And he warns against anything that will defile a proper conscience in 1 Corinthians 8:7 and Titus 1:15. By the way, we're also in danger of a calloused or a seared conscience. So we can diminish even those things that are to be used by God as additional tools in our life. But our conscience holds court every day, and be sure the jury knows all the facts. So regularly question your conscience. Just don't get so caught up on yourself. Get caught up more in the Word of God instead of self. You get caught up in self, you're in trouble already. In trouble already. People say, well, I think, are guided by their conscience. But that conscience is not going to be accurate. It can be greatly skewed in life. And more often than not, it is. Number eight, how to stay pure before the Lord. Know that the Lord is watching. Now, our lives get busier and busier as the decades roll on. People are just more busy and more distracted. You say, how in the world can kids be running the street and doing what they're doing? Mostly, their moms and dads don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know. They don't even know. They're so detached, doing their own thing. One goes over here, another one goes over there, and this one's over there, and nobody knows what the kids are doing. That's a problem. That's a problem for everyone. It's imperative that we understand we have a sovereign God who sees and knows all things. And we have to teach our children, no matter what, Jesus sees you. The Lord sees you. The Lord sees all things. Proverbs 5:21, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. Why are you going there? What are you doing? Are you sure you should be going there? That's not the best of places for you to go. You follow me? The Lord, listen, the Lord is our friend, by the way. He's our counselor. He's our guide. He's our guiding light. But the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord. I always wanted to behave if I knew my mom and daddy were watching me. I always wanted to behave. If I go by the police out on the highway, I just know they got their eye on me. Now, they may not, but that's what I'm thinking. And so what do? I look down at the speedometer. Right? Now, it's not bad. I said it's not bad. That's actually good. It's bad if you're going too fast, then it's going to be, but you think they're watching me. It's good to know that somebody in authority is watching. It's a good thing, all right? So it's a great thing to know that that is not somebody may have a skewed judgment, but somebody with a perfect judgment, and that's God. And God is always watching. Always. But I was always a better kid if my mom and daddy were watching me. Always. Weren't you? Don't you think you'd be a better kid if you realized God's always watching? God's always watching. I was more tempted when I thought mom and daddy couldn't see me. Weren't you? I said, weren't you? Know that God is watching. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Take your Bibles and go to Genesis 39. Here's something we need to do. Come not nigh her door. Be ready to run. Be ready to run. Sometimes the best thing is get out of there. Get out of there. Run. Run. Get away. Get away. I used to tell teenagers years ago, I don't care what's happening. You get in trouble, run and call me. If you can't get in touch with mom and daddy, you're scared, mom and daddy's going to beat you half to death if they find out, call me. And I'll come running just as fast as I can get there. No matter what, I'll come to your aid and I'll help you. No matter what. No matter what, run from bad places. That's what Joseph did with Potiphar's wife who tried to get him, get her, my dad would say, get her hooks in him. She tried to catch him, by the way, which shows her aggressiveness. And have you noticed, I started noticing a lot more aggression back in the 70s of girls. Aggressiveness. And now, I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a teenager today with the aggressiveness of young girls and even young female adults today. It's way beyond anything that it was when I was a young guy. And it's just, it's off the charts and the vulgarity and just, it's worse than a billboard, all right? It's like those cards when you're walking down the street of Las Vegas and it's just so militant. And so wrong and so wicked. Well, in Genesis, what did I say? Genesis chapter 39. Let's pick up in verse 5. That's of course with Joseph, Potiphar's wife. It came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house. So Joseph made overseer by Potiphar. And over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. So God blessed Joseph and this now the Egyptian's house because of Joseph. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not all that he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. God was blessing him. He was the cream of the crop. He's one of the best guys in town in the whole country. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. Well, where did her eyes belong? On her husband. But now she's casting her eyes on him. Well, who is he? He's the best man in town. He's the best man in that part of the country. So she cast her eyes upon Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused. Well, that's good. And said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wanteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, and which he was made that by Potiphar. Blessed by this man, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, well, whose idea was that? Well, I bet you it wasn't Joseph's. She made a point of this, that she hearkened not, he hearkened not unto her to lie with her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. Oh, so maybe she sent them away, maybe not. We don't know, do we? And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled. And you got to love this, and got him out. Get out of there. Get out of there. Fled and got out of there. And it came to pass when she saw that he left his garments in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house. Oh, now she wants the men around. And spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us, lying through her wicked teeth. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice, liar, liar, pants on fire. And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. That's one of the reasons why you cannot just take a person's word for something like this. You can't just do it. All right? And what verse am I in? Oh, spake unto him to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. It came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. It came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. Now, if I was Potiphar, yeah, but she lied and deceived her own husband. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. This goes to the point of Proverbs chapter 6, verse 23, that the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. It can go from the male to the female, or it can, as this passage is talking about, from a female to the male. It doesn't really matter. One is seeking to ensnare, to entrap, to destroy. James, of course, 4:7 says, submit yourself therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Paul is a man of experience. He's a man of wisdom before God, and he writes young Timothy some of his last words that he's going to write to anyone. And listen, I get disappointed by wayward church members. I do. I don't like it. I don't like having my heart broke. Do you? But more than that, I get even more disappointed in sorrow about those you've invested in for the gospel ministry, and they blow up. They blow up, blow out. They're useless. And you don't want that. You've invested a lot. And you don't want that. This is what he told young Timothy. Listen to this. Chapter 2, verse 22, 2 Timothy. Flee also youthful lust. Now there's lust, and then there's youthful lust. And I think you can understand the differences between the two. But flee also youthful lust. But follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. So not only flee youthful lust, follow these things and follow them with other good people. People, people, people. You want to hang with good people. You want to run around with good people. You make sure you run around with faithful people. You run around with people who can watch their mouth, watch their heart, watch their manners. That's who the type of people you need to hang around and be around in your life. Now, you have to do some other things for evangelism. I understand that. But the people you just hang around, you need to hang with good people. They will rub off on you if you don't, and they do if they're good. Which one do you want? Psalm 101, verse 3 says, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. I don't want one speck of mud, not one. Now, I want to tell you a little story, and I've shared this, I think, one other time, and I was very thankful for the success of running. And this goes with number 10 in my outline. I think it's number 10 for you, is make yourself accountable to good people. Make yourself accountable to good people. Now, that first starts with your good husband or wife. But if you don't have that, and I feel sorry for you if you don't, I sincerely do. Find other good people in your church, other good people in your workplace. Find other good people to make yourself accountable to them. And especially if you can choose an elder, somebody more experienced than yourself, that's always a better choice. Listen, that's always a better choice. I grieve when I hear somebody 20 years old who takes all their counsel after another 20-year-old. Now, I'm all for 20-year-olds doing their best and helping others, but I'm just telling you, there's something said for experience and wisdom of life. Now, make yourself accountable. The Bible says a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Some people are friends, but they'll blow up on you as soon as you have a sincere hardship. Well, that's not a true friend. That's an opportunist. Proverbs 27:17, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. I was a youth director at this time. And there are times, I pointed out before, you know, when I was young, I had a lot more hair and I had a lot better physique. And I did, didn't I, Miss Rose? Yeah, she'd tell the truth. And but at times, you know, when you're young, of course, you're better shape and better looking, you know, and you're engaging with people, especially young people. At, from time to time, you'd get a girl, a teenage girl, get a crush on you. And that's natural, especially when you're showing some attention, especially a girl that was abused or just not treated well. And, you know, then all of a sudden, here comes somebody along and they treat them decent, you know. And it's, you know, who doesn't like to be treated decent? Tell me, who doesn't like to be treated decent? So if all they've ever known is just somebody not treating them decent, all of a sudden somebody's treating them decent, it's easy to get your heartstrings, you know, attached. And you want to be around them, and you start doing things on purpose just to be around them, because you don't like to be destroyed, and the people around you are always seeming to destroy you. And all of a sudden, here's somebody that's not seeking to destroy you. Well, this particular girl was mistreated, and they, of course, they crave male attention, especially if their fathers are not in the role that they need to be. Especially. Not they can have good fathers, but especially if they do not have good fathers. But you got to be on your guard for the start of really the crush. And I've always found if you realize, and sometimes I didn't even realize, sometimes Miss Dory would have to tell me, you know, they're getting a crush on you. And I said, no. Oh, yeah. So I learned to just trust her judgment instead of mine, because I'm kind of locked in that track, you know. Just do the work. And I'm not thinking about those other things all the time. But anyway, you don't want to encourage that type of thing. But anyway, this young growing up, physically, not mentally, not emotionally, not spiritually, but grown up, physical, mature woman ran away from home. And when I came out of college that day, I was a senior in Bible college, I noticed a bumper sticker, and I said, well, that bumper sticker doesn't belong here. That bumper sticker belongs at church. I just, you know, just identified, wait a minute, I've seen that bumper sticker, but that bumper sticker doesn't belong here. It belongs at our church over in Garland. And I noticed her car, and I went over, and I stuck my head, Brother John, I stuck my head in the door, and she was looking around. I said, what in the world are you doing here? And as soon as I stuck my head in that door, I realized, trouble with a capital T, just by the way she was dressed. Now, she didn't dress that way at church, but I realized I'm in trouble. This is trouble. This is serious, serious trouble. Now, I'm so thankful that I had a good friend. Matter of fact, he's a plumber up in the panhandle of Oklahoma right now and preaches for his preacher on a regular basis. May end up being the pastor of that church. I don't know, but we'll see. But he was with me. And so what I did, I was just struck. I didn't, you know, shocked. I didn't expect this. And I knew, man, this is bad. This is real bad. And so what did I do? What are you doing here? I reached in. I took her keys where she couldn't go anywhere. I took her keys and I said, well, I've got to go to the bank and I'll be back. Well, immediately I needed a game plan, right? Be prepared. So I told my friend, I said, you're not leaving me. You're not leaving me. We're going to the bank and we're going to figure out what to do. We'll deal with her when we get back. So I went to the bank with him, and what in the world am I going to do? I mean, this is explosive. This is scandal in the making, all that kind of thing. And so I went to the bank, and what we decided to do is go back and go to somebody older than us. You hear? Older than us. So we went to the college dean. Went up to the main campus, went to the college dean, told him what was going on. I laid it out, plain and straight. That's the best way to go. Plain and straight. Get right to the heart of it. This is what's going on. This is what I'm sensing. And here's the danger. Here's the type of parents we're dealing with. All right? And so we organized a game plan with him and his oversight, which is going to be constant from now all the way through to the end. So now I'm not only accountable to my friend, appear, but now I'm accountable to a man much my elder and far better man than I was at that stage of my life. So to go back and, of course, and start dealing with her and talk to the girl together, all of us went down, and this is the plan, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to handle this to get you safely back home where you belong. All right? And so we implemented all of that, to do all that in case somebody was to falsely accuse me. And I tell you, it's not going to be a matter of if, it's just a matter of where it's going to come from and how severe it's going to be, because you are going to be falsely accused, so you better be prepared. And you better have a plan when you're falsely accused. Now, we get back there, of course, and go to a public place and call her mom and dad. Called her mom. And mom hung up on me. First thing she did, hung up on me. So I called her back. I told her, said, your daughter is here. Don't hang up on me. And she didn't hang up. Next thing you know, called the dad. And this is abusive home. Not the mother, but the father. It's an abusive situation. We got through all of that, and I tell you, when I went down to the car, and I had now my friend, who's a good, solid Christian guy. We used to play tennis a little bit together. Yeah, I've talked to you about him before. And then now we have the dean of students. Now, by making myself accountable, and they're aware, listen, all the dangers of passion, that can happen in my heart too. All of a sudden now, all that's in the right spot, see? Now, if I don't make myself accountable and I don't bring in that help, can I fall? Is there a sun in the sky? Of course I can. And so could you. So could you. So by making myself accountable to my friend and my elder and better, it stopped my emotions from running away with me, because I was still a young man, Brother Garrett. I was still a young man. Very much with young man passions. And I started thinking proper thoughts instead of being tempted to have improper thoughts. Which improper thoughts, of course, are the breeding ground for more trouble. Wow. She did this for me. See? Feed the ego. Now, I could tell you other cases, and I could tell you other cases that I've shared with other men who've actually saved their lives, saved their marriages. But I'm telling you, accountability works. It does work. So embrace the fact God's always watching, and build up friends and accountability. Number 11, walk in the Spirit. This is the same as walking in wisdom here in chapter 7. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. Galatians 5:17, for the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. I tell you what, I'm over time. Let's see. Tell you what, let me just stop right there, and I'll wrap this up in a third part. And because I've got too much more to finish up with the outline. Is that okay with you? All right, now listen, young people, I love you, and the older people in this church love you. And we want to see you do good. We really, really want to see you do good. And because there's a lot of young people out there who end up not doing good. And there's a lot of older people who didn't do so good. And we realize the good path is the good path, and the bad path is that other way. And we want you to have a happy and productive life. Now, we realize that takes three. It takes three. Not just two, not one. It takes three. We recognize that. But we want God's best for your life. But it just doesn't happen. You just don't fall out of your car on Monday and it just, good life happens to you. You got to fight for it. You got to know what you're fighting for. You got to know what you need to get. And you need to know how to go and obtain what you need to get for your life. But I want you to know, you can do this. And you can be successful, and you can have a wonderful marriage and a wonderful Christian home. There's no such thing as a perfect home. But you can have a wonderful Christian home. And I pray that you strive to get that. Don't say to yourself, well, it's so hard to do these days. Well, if gold was easy to get, everybody would have some. But you got to be a good miner. You got to go mine it out of the ground. And yes, you're going to skin your knuckles. You're going to have to work hard, and you're going to get tired of working hard, and you're going to have to still get up and go to work the next day. You with me? But you can do it. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. And I guarantee you, others who have not been so blessed with that life, if they would tell you, they would say, amen. It is the right way. It is the blessed way. It is the peaceful way. Now, I know a lot of people disappoint a lot of people. I get it. The only person I've never been disappointed with in my life is my God. That's it. And I know He's promised never to leave me nor to fail me. But other people are there also for my good. I was just speaking with one of our ladies and her husband. She wrote me a little kind little note on a text this last week. And I told her, I said, you have no idea, you know, what your little note meant to me. I don't like to be disappointed. I don't like to invest in something or somebody and just have it thrown in your face and it just comes back and it seems like it's work of vanity. I don't like that. And it had been pretty hard 3 days. And just a little note of encouragement. They pointed out and says, well, it makes a big difference in knowing that you have a good preacher. We don't know what we would be, you know, without a good preacher. And I said, but here's what, you know, it goes the other way too. It goes the other way. The people of the church greatly strengthen and benefit their own pastor. So that iron sharpeneth iron. And I pray I help you and make you better. Because I know that you help me be better. So thank you for that, and God bless you. Let's stand together for prayer.